B-Pod Studios.
Oh! Hey, it's Casper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, coming to you from the Town Fair Tire Studio in lovely Dorchester, Massachusetts. I can't remember the last time I've been here for this show, Chris. Feels like it's been a month, weeks, at
least.
Yeah,
it's been a while for you, huh?
Well, we're here, back together. I know Chris is fired up because Chris doesn't throw out the eyeball emoji much. But I saw an hour ago reacting to this tweet as Mike Reese of ESPN Boston actually tweeted out the, just in print what Bill Belichick said to Charlie Weiss on Sirius XM radio yesterday. Chris retweets with the eyeball emoji, so I know you have thoughts. So before we actually get to your thoughts, though, why don't we actually hear the full clip?
Sure.
With Bill Belichick on Sirius XM NFL radio yesterday with his former offensive coordinator, rather, Charlie Weiss.
Bill, I've really noticed, watching the Pats, you're playing a whole bunch of young guys, and I know that you've always been able to find these young guys that could play early in their career. Are most of them playing because you like them, or some of them playing because you have to play them in the world we're living in?
You're right, Charlie. We're playing more young players than we played in the past. We had a combination of reasons. We were pretty heavily invested in our team in the past few years, and from a salary cap standpoint, we didn't have much flexibility at all. I think that was obvious on the Cam Newton contract. So we had some opt outs, so we lost some players there that would normally have been given a significant amount of play time. And then, like every year, a couple guys are banged up, and we've missed some. Miss some guys here and there in certain games. But I think when you combine it all together, there's opportunity there, and some of that opportunity's gone to younger players. And again, because of our cap situation, and in this particular year, this is kind of the year that we've taken to, I would say, adjust our cap from the spending and that we've had, in accumulation of prior years, that we just haven't been able to have the kind of depth on our roster that we've had in some other years, and that's provided more opportunity for younger players. So it's a combination of all the reasons.
Chris, your thoughts?
He is disavowing himself from this disaster and this failure, and I think you cannot be in a situation where you don't couple this with his uncommon comments about not being able to practice right after a game. Normally right after a game, it's like, hey, Bill, what went wrong? I don't know. I have to look at the film. Immediately after that game, they lost to Denver, unsolicited, on a question about the offensive line. He started bringing up practice and then banged that drum for a week straight. Now this, we don't have the depth we've had in the past. Anytime you've ever asked him about anybody who's out there, he says, if we didn't believe in them, they wouldn't be out there. Now this is sort of like, we don't have the depth we've had in the past. A big part of the Bill Belichick legend, the mythology around Bill Belichick, is doing more with less. That's why he's Bill Belichick. That's basically a tacit admission that he can't do it with this roster, and by extension, he can't do it without a franchise quarterback.
It's further proof, Chris, of just how upside down 2020 is. Here is a guy whose mantra for the last 20 years up until this year, as one of them, has been no excuses. We don't make excuses. And all I've heard from this man over the last few weeks is nonstop excuses. This audio, there's not much that, like, sometimes, look, it's a hyperbolic world we live in here in sports radio. But when I first saw it, I was like, oh. And then hearing it again, the Pauly Gualtieri, oh, 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 oh. Bill, this roster, the state of this team is on one man and one man only. Look in the mirror. Now, first it was, oh, it's on the league. I'm mad about practice.
Yes.
Now it's, well, the state of the roster and the cap space, well, that's about ownership. This is a bridge year, essentially, is what he's telling you in that clip. Don't put that on me. That's not on me. That's on ownership. Oh, wow. Is he pushing away from the table? And really, I feel like he's already setting everybody up for, we're going to lose in Buffalo, and now it's Tankapalooza. This season's basically cashed.
And the other thing about that that's interesting when he talks about the salary cap is you have some guys, obviously, with high cap numbers like Joe Tooney and Stephon Gilmore. Is he greasing the skids to deal those guys off and to say, well, no, it's not tanking. It's not a sell-off. We just had to reset our salary cap, and these are some of our higher numbers. And so we had no – by the way, this is the same guy who said – when asked about Wes Welker at the end of the 2012 season, as we all know, cap space can be maneuvered in a variety of ways. Now, suddenly, the cap is handcuffing him from building the roster that he wants.
It's unbelievable. It really is. The bad drafting has finally caught up to him, and he no longer has the play of Tom Brady to cover up, you know, holes on this roster like he has had in the past. And it's not just the quarterback play, but this is what's happening. The state of the roster is on you, Bill. It's on you. Enough with the excuse making. And, okay, yeah, the practice did catch up with them a little bit there in that game against Denver, but they're still better than that team. They should have beat them. The tailspin that this team is in, Chris, it's like I didn't have high expectations for them anyway. I figured around 9-7, they'd get into the playoffs, maybe win wild card weekend. That would be about it. But the tailspin since Kansas City, it's unbelievable. And it's not just the COVID thing. It's not the lack of practice. It's not this cap space thing. Like, something's happened here. And I would love to know what it is. Like, there's... I can't put my finger on it because they're better than this. I know that they aren't a very good roster. They have a lot of holes, but they should be better than the way that they've played these last few weeks. They should have beat Denver, but here we are. And I almost give them now, especially after hearing this, almost no chance in Buffalo tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was going to be an uphill climb for them before I heard these comments, just based on the injuries. I mean, it seems like this Gilmore injury is legitimate. You don't have your top two receivers. Your offensive line is banged up, even if guys like Tooney and Heron play. You're banged up there. So, you know, I'm not saying I was giving them a pass, but I wasn't optimistic to begin with. But I feel like that is a window into Bill Belichick's football soul and how he really feels about this team. And I'll say this. If they somehow turn it around, if Cam Newton plays really well and they come out with the win, I do not want to hear about, you know, oh, Bill Belichick had them ready to go. You know, Belichick always does more with less. Belichick owns this division, because he's basically telling you in that sound, to your point, Jim, that he doesn't think they're going to win. So if they do, it can't suddenly be, oh, you know, look, Bill knew all along and he turned this team around and, you know, he knew he could get to Buffalo and, you know, he owns Josh Allen, which he does. And that's why I still give them a chance in this game. But he's telling you right there what this sort of reminds me of in a lot of ways. 2010, they lose that game to the Jets. There's the Patrick Chung fake punt, which apparently, if you listen to Bill, it was a play they never practiced, that Patrick Chung called on his own, that they just made up on the spot, and that the coaching staff had nothing to do with, which there's no way. Like, even if Chung made the final decision, it was a play that was in there. If you saw a certain look, you run this play. I'm sure they had run it all year long. He has a tendency to distance himself from failure and then sort of be first in line for success. And he might not do it overtly at press conferences, but how many books have been written about the brilliance of Bill Belichick?
Oh, it's all that there is written about the man.
It's a cottage industry.
Yeah.
And he deserves it because he is a brilliant man. But for all those people who say he doesn't care about the media thing, he doesn't care how he's perceived, oh, he cares. Or he wouldn't be saying comments like this. I mean, that was like borderline Brady, Jim Gray, where it wasn't as much about the answer as it was Charlie Weiss asking him the question.
Yeah.
That question was a plant.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this whole interview was a plant. We'll play more from it. It's look, he's the greatest coach of all time.
Absolutely.
But he's also a giant baby. And his inability to own it and own situations like this is why I think you have, you know, out come the wolves and people have torches, you know, ready.
Yeah.
And there's people throughout the country, they're really enjoying the comeuppance of the Patriots this year. It's because of behavior like this. Like, he just can't own it and be real about it. Like, this is, oh, it's not me. Don't put it on me.
Yeah.
This is everybody else's problem.
Exactly. And that's surprising, especially when the whole mantra of the Patriots is, you know, control what you can control.
You know?
So he's bringing up stuff like practice and the opt-outs. Okay, you know, those are tough breaks. I'm not going to deny that those were bad breaks for Bill Belichick. But in the past, when something like that has happened to his team or to a player, it's always control what you can control. He couldn't control that stuff. And it happened in the case of the opt-outs. Like, it's not like the opt-outs happened a week before the Denver game. You knew. You've had this the whole time. So what's next? No offseason, no OTAs? He's going to throw that out there? So you can't be no days off, do your job, ignore the noise, control what you can control, and then come out and basically fire off a fusillade of excuses after every loss.
It's unbelievable. We've heard, you know, little bits and pieces of these type of excuses in the past when he's been bitter that they've lost a game, but it's just been nonstop here for weeks. And I just, again, it just shows you how upside down 2020 is from a guy that always said, no excuses, control what you can control. Now, well, don't look at me. We weren't able to practice this cap space issue. That's the reason for the state of the team. Not me.
These young guys aren't really ready to go. But hey, you know, based on the cap, that's all I have.
Bill, who drafted them? Who drafted them? You've had like five straight terrible drafts now. You know, it's time to look in the mirror. I can't believe that he actually went on record to say this kind of thing. Like, oh no, I'm absolved of all of this. Don't. It's not my problem. If they are to lose Chris tomorrow, should they strip this thing down to the bones?
Well, before I didn't feel that way, and I'll tell you why. I said this before. I'm not sure it's so easy for them to wave the white flag. And a lot of that has to do with my belief in Belichick and the fact that he is such a great coach, because they're still playing in a terrible division. And five of the final 10 games are against the AFC East. So even if you just split with Buffalo, you beat Miami, sweep the Jets, that's four more wins. That gets you to six. Then on your schedule, you have the Houston Texans, who I think are going to have a fire sale. And so now if you beat them, that's seven.
Is that informed, or are you just speculating on the
That's speculation, just based on what's been reported. I think they're going to have a fire sale down there. And then you also have the Chargers, and as well as Justin Herbert's playing, he's still a rookie going against Bill Belichick, and who knows where they'll be at in December. You could win that. That's eight wins, like, pretty much by accident. And now you're 8-8, and you're in the middle. So I don't know if they can wave the white flag if they try.
Yeah, I said a week ago, don't trade Stephon Gilmore. I thought that they showed how important he was to the team when they made sure he had to get on that plane to Kansas City after the COVID dinner with Cam, right?
Yeah,
and I think that they're good. That's their strongest position on the team, but Gilmore's their best player too, even though it's been kind of a down-ish year for him so far.
Yeah.
But after the way they got steamrolled by the Niners, and I saw quit too in that second half, especially from the defense and guys like Gilmore, after that, Chris, I was like, all right, we're done here. Like, get what you can, rebuild. This is back to the real old days. Like, I'm old enough, you are too, to remember like pre-Pete Carroll, pre-Bill Parsons.
You don't mean
like
Russ, Dick McPherson.
No, not that bad, but it's pretty ugly. Like, it was, how about the end of the Pete Carroll type era? Like, when it was like, this team has some talent, but boy, they just, like, they don't even want to be there.
Like, but that's like 9-7, 8-8, and that's what I'm telling you. Yeah. Like, if you're going to tank, like, you got to do it right. And if you're really going to also, here, let me ask you this before we you know, take a little time out here. How does Cam Newton respond if you strip it all down, right? I mean, what do you do at that point? Part of stripping it all down, if you're really saying we're tanking, you probably have to cut Cam Newton and play Stidham.
That would be the fair thing to do, considering that I think that guy's playing for his career. You know, the
agreed.
Way that he's played these last couple of weeks, you know, I thought he was going to come here, have a good season, put up some good numbers. It would just be like, you know, it would be 1 year for the sex. That's all. It's mutually beneficial.
Quarterback Cam, version of Revis.
Yeah. Cam goes off to greener pastures and gets paid somewhere else. So the right thing to do if they were going to tank would be to let him go and maybe try to get picked up by Dallas or something like that, who, you know, needs a quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think, you know, that if you're going to do it, you really have to. I think given their division, and I think now it's time, Patriots fans, you have to look back. You know, the dynasty you had was incredible, and you had the best coach of all time and the best quarterback of all time. But 17 out of 19 division titles and 11 in a row, you got to admit, the competition or lack thereof had something to do with it. Because you look at it this year, this division is bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's bad.
Although the Dolphins might be a little bit better than people.
You think so?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But let's see how this Tua experiment.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I feel like that whole thing, it might be a little bit premature. They were kind of not rolling, but they looked pretty well with, looked pretty good rather with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the helm. But now, like, yeah, who knows? It's still the AFC East. Either way, though, don't look at Bill Belichick. It's not his fault. The lack of talent on this team, the poor drafting, the bad personnel decisions. No. That's not on me. That's somebody else's problem. And the way that we've played the last few weeks, no, that's because of lack of practice. And I can't really do anything because of cap space. It's a bridge year, guys. It's on ownership. It's not on me. It's unbelievable. More from this interview he did with Charlie Weiss on and a Sirius XM NFL radio coming up. We'll have more.
This declaration of defeat.
Yeah, it is. Last year, it was a declaration of doneness heading into the wild card game. We all signed that here, anyone with half a brain. And now it's a declaration of defeat from the head coach himself. More from this interview coming up here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Between McCourty and James White and Slater and Andrews and Cam, how are these guys under these adverse situations right now leading the team and holding everything together?
We're very fortunate. We have a very good group. They're mature. They understand the team concept and the sacrifices that we all as individuals have to make for the good of the team. They've shown a lot of leadership, you know, by example of, you know, giving up things and doing things differently or having to do things, take a process that's maybe longer than what they've been used to in order to get to where we need to go. So we've gotten great leadership from, you know, from that group. As you said, Cam is a new player coming in, but, you know, Cam's got a very good personality. He's very team-oriented, a very unselfish player that earns everybody's respect because of his work ethic and his commitment to the team. So all that's really been a positive for us. We just have to go out and execute and coach and play better. That's the bottom line. And, you know, we had a good training camp and, you know, we played, you know, pretty well the first 3 weeks of the season. And then we, you know, I would say regressed over the next 2.5 weeks for, you know, a combination of reasons. And we're trying to make that ground back up now and more. And we need to keep going forward. And that's what we're doing. So we're in that kind of, in that phase. We're getting better, but we need to get better faster, and we need to, like I said, make up for some lost ground we had where we, you know, didn't practice and, you know, had, you know, multiple players playing different spots on the offensive line and, you know, things like that, where just really even the experience we got wasn't, it was beneficial, but it wasn't as beneficial as what it could have been.
He just can't help himself. Phil, take the advice of the song. No excuses. No excuses. Instead, it's nonstop excuses. That was more from Bill Belichick's interview on SiriusXM NFL Radio yesterday with his former offensive coach, Charlie Weiss, who, by the way, has a bit of a Dave O'Brien thing going on there. I hadn't noticed that before.
Oh, really? He does?
Yeah, he's got like a with the team going through a rough stretch there, Bill.
You have a very sensitive ear.
I really do.
I really do. I didn't even notice it.
Can't get these earworms out. Once I hear them, you can't unhear them. There seems, how's the leadership going on with your guy? Anyway.
So do you think Berzerian, who is Bill's guy, do you think he just wrote the questions and emailed them to Charlie?
Probably.
Or do you think Charlie and Bill talked? Or, I mean, this is straight up Jim Gray and Brady.
It's just propaganda is what it is.
The answers, as I always like to say about the Jim Gray-Brady interview, and I feel like I was the first one who said this, the key isn't the answers, it's the questions. The answers are in the questions. The questions that have been cleared to be asked. And you can listen to Weiss asking those questions, and the whole thing is like a setup for Bill to disavow himself from this disappointing season and basically talk about how they can't make up ground and that, you know, they're on to 2021.
Bill, you wouldn't be in this position if you hit on your draft picks over the last 5 years. That's all. Now it's catching up to you. That's what it is to me, Chris. If you really just want to strip it down to one thing, all these bad drafts over the last five, I'm going to call it five, and I think I'm being fair, have finally caught up to him. If you had young players that could actually play, like you see throughout the league,
yep,
you wouldn't be in this position. I don't think it would feel like it's over, at least for 2020, and the way that this team has played the last couple of years. He's the one that has screwed this up. It's time to look in the mirror, Bill. Stop pointing fingers and making excuses. Again, no excuses. No excuses, Bill Belichick. Instead, it's all I'm hearing, and now it's the cap. He's talking about the cap. Like, we all know that cap space can be maneuvered in many different ways. You once said that.
It's the same guy who said that.
My God.
I mean, it is just shocking to hear. It really is. And look, I'm not saying there's not a level of honesty in it, but this is the type of honesty that he didn't display before.
Yeah, right.
And so it's a very convenient time when you're 2-4 and on the precipice of going 2-5 to decide that you're going to be honest about the challenges your team and your organization faces. You know, I just feel it's a really interesting time to do that. And you want to let me add one more thing you can put on Bill. And you mentioned the drafting, and the drafting hasn't been good of late. There's no question about that. And obviously he is the guy, the buck stops with him, but I think you have to look at the entire football operations department, scouting, all that. But I'll say this. If Tom Brady were still on this team, they wouldn't be in this position. And I think that's something Bill Belichick could have controlled. And I said it to Maz the other day off the air, and we were talking about this. Felger and Maz blame Brady for walking away after Jimmy Garoppolo was traded and say that he let down Kraft and he let down the franchise. I look at it differently. Look at the way – let me just roll this back. Super Bowl 51, they obviously have the comeback, but Adam Schefter comes out and says that if that game had kept going that way, there was a real chance Jimmy Garoppolo would have been the starter in 2017. Then 2017, suddenly Bill has an issue with Guerrero being around. He has an issue with all these things with Brady. He's greasing the skids at that point to move on to Jimmy Garoppolo. He's already made up his mind. The whole Schefter thing, they won't trade this guy for four first-round picks in terms of Garoppolo. He's greasing the skids. He wants to make it so Brady doesn't want to be there. He's like, I'm done with this. I'm resetting the culture for Jimmy G. Then October rolls around. He gets overruled. He has to get rid of Jimmy G and stick with Brady. And what's the one thing we talk about with Bill Belichick? Adaptability. He never adapted. He spent the rest of the time Brady was here passive-aggressively upset that Brady was the reason he had to trade the guy he really wanted to play with. He never came back to Brady and made good. And even I know that Brady's tone had softened this past offseason. He was willing to hear the Patriots out. And if he had heard something like from Bill that was different from the past, like, we need you, you know, we're partners here, let's finish this thing, I think it would have changed his mind, or at least could have. Instead, it was more of the same. He didn't change a thing. So that's on Bill, too. He ran the quarterback off. You know, I know people want to portray it as Tom bailed on them after they traded Garoppolo. It's more like Belichick ran the guy off because he was passive-aggressive and upset that the guy he really wanted was gone.
You'll get no argument from me on that. And usually, you know, Mike and Tony's retort is, oh, well. Like, I don't think it was that big of an ask, guys. And those that, you know, side with Belichick on that, all he was ever looking for was a real extension and a little bit of respect.
Yep.
And as we're seeing, the quarterback was pretty important, wasn't he? Yeah. He kind of made you forget about the holes that this team had in certain years, like 2011, when especially that secondary was trash and that team somehow makes the Super Bowl. It was about the quarterback, at least over the last decade. To me, like, I think it's like a 70-30. You could even talk me into 60-40. Tom more important than Bill. I think you're seeing that I was right. We, the Brady Bobos, were a little bit it's okay to say we were right. We were close to being pretty right on that one over the last decade.
Well, all you have to see, and let's see what happens with Tampa, because I think Tom has imperiled himself by bringing in Antonio Brown. I think it's a huge mistake. But all you have to say is this, and I'm not saying this guy's a terrible coach, but he's not an elite coach. So you give Bruce Arians Tom Brady, and suddenly that operation looks a lot better, doesn't it? Just like you give Pete Carroll Russell Wilson. This has been my thing from the jump. Any of these guys, you give them a quarterback, and they suddenly look a lot smarter, don't they?
At 43 years old, at 43, the man is in the MVP conversation, and he's going to be on center stage Monday night against the Giants. Oh, it's been so good. Oh, these last couple of weeks, I'm not going to lie. But you do the Patriots postgame. You're supposed to be a Patriot. Still a Patriots fan, but I said going into this, oh, no, I'll be rooting for Tom harder than the Patriots this year, and so far, I will admit, these last couple of weeks, oh, it's been so good. Oh, you know it too, Chris. You and I have been texting like, it's so good. It really is. Oh, a little bit of comeuppance, a little bit of humble pie for you, Bill. I think it's okay. I think it's about time you tasted it. But he can't even own it. No, it's not my fault. No. The cap, what am I supposed to do? Oh, no. Oh, no, well, you know, what am I supposed to do? I mean, the teams look so bad because we can't practice, lack of practice. I'm mad at my players. I'm mad at the team. I'm mad at COVID. I'm mad at the world. Bill, just own it. Just own it. They're in the situation that they are because of you. You're the one that ran the quarterback off. The quarterback who at 43 is in the MVP conversation. But I am with Chris, and we'll get to this later. I hate with the power of 1,000 suns that he keeps aligning himself with such a sleaze like Antonio Brown. Like, Tom, what are you doing? But we'll get to that. I see a lot of you hanging. You want to talk about this Belichick audio with this interview he had on SiriusXM NFL Radio yesterday with Charlie Weiss. We'll get to your calls coming up next here on Gasper Murray 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You're listening to Jasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Our cap situation in this particular year, it's really, this is kind of the year that we've taken to, I would say, adjust our cap from the spending and that we've had, you know, in accumulation of prior years that we just haven't been able to have the kind of depth on our roster that we've had in some other years. And that's provided more opportunity for younger players. So it's a combination of all the reasons.
Up 1978's Van Halen 1. It's Bill is Crying here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Gasper and Murray. I mean, that clip still blows my mind. It's Bill Belichick on Sirius XM NFL Radio yesterday with Charlie Weiss saying, essentially, look, the shape of the roster, don't put it on me. There's not much we can do because of the cap space. The cap space, which can be maneuvered in different ways, as I've said before. But now, my hands are tied, guys. Why do you think he's doing this, Chris? Like, this whole thing, especially this kind of clip, it's so out of character. Is it simply because he's now starting to feel the heat? With Brady gone, the criticism has gone up. This team has played so poorly the last couple of weeks. We see how evident it is, the holes on this roster. Is this just response to criticism?
I don't know if it's response to criticism, but one thing that I think people have to understand is that Bill Belichick is a very, very dedicated historian of football, and he's also very aware of his place in football history. And this season kind of punctures some of the mythology around him, and I think that it's important to him that that doesn't take place. I think a lot of people look at this season as a referendum on Brady Belichick. I've been saying that there's a game on the schedule for the Patriots every week that's not actually on the NFL schedule, and that's Tom versus Bill. And he's losing. And how do you sort of rationalize that? You say, well, I don't have the tools. And I think that what's really interesting about this, when you sort of listen to Bill, is I just want to sort of poke a hole in this whole thing to begin with. And maybe you can help me and you can enlighten me. Who are the young players he's talking about? I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like, who are these young guys that wouldn't ordinarily be playing that are suddenly playing that are cost? Is it the offensive line? Because Owenu has been one of their best players.
That's a guy you hit on.
Pro Football Focus rates him as not only one of the best offensive linemen, but one of the best rookies. It's like, you know, you look at it, it's him and it's Justin Jefferson from the Vikings, you know, a receiver drafted in the first round who can, I don't know, play. So when you look at it, but name these young guys that he's having to play. Is it Juwan Bentley, who they made a captain? Is that the young guy he's talking about? Because, I mean, certainly it hurts to not have Hightower, but Adrian Phillips isn't a young guy, and he's replacing Patrick Chung.
Chase Winovich, who's now in your doghouse for whatever reason.
Yeah, is also your best pass rusher. Yeah. I'm being serious.
I'm
not trying to be a wise ass. Who are the young players that Weiss referred to in this incredibly planted question? I mean, straight out of, that question was like straight out of the TASS news agency in Russia. Like, what are we doing here? But I'm asking the question, honestly, can someone enlighten me? Is it Damir Bird, who they signed as a veteran free agent? Is it N'Keal Harry, a first round pick who would play anyway?
It ain't the tight ends who they drafted who can't get on the field.
You know, yeah, maybe. So that's one I would give him. Like, you know, but
Asiasi was a scratch last week.
Yeah. But they traded up for those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you want the credit for trading up for Gronk. I mean, you traded up for those guys. So I'll give him the tight ends. But I'm honestly trying to think position by position. Who are the, like, Jonathan Jones, you signed to an extension at corner. You're still playing Jason McCourty. JC Jackson is a starter type guy, period. Stephon Gilmore is the reigning defensive player of the year. Safeties, Devin McCourty. You have a guy like Terrence Brooks. Duggar was your first overall draft pick. Adrian Phillips plays a ton. Adam Butler on the front of the defensive line is a guy who played well last year. Like Byron Cowart? Who are these young guys he's talking about that they had no plans to play that suddenly they're forced to play based on the salary cap and opt-outs? Because I'm racking my brain, and other than the tight ends, I can't. So, by the way, You know who opted out? Matt Lacoste. So you know what it turns out? Matt Lacoste was the key to everything, not Tom Brady. Yeah, it's Jenga. Right. You pull Matt Lacoste out, whole dynasty collapse, according to Bill Belichick. That's the only guy opt-out-wise I can think of where young guys are playing that maybe wouldn't be playing ordinarily.
Well, you know who I'm sure has very strong thoughts on this? Is a caller I initially found very annoying, but I've come to love. And that's Jake in Boston. You're first up here on Gasper Murray this morning. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jake.
First of all, on the money spent this offseason, what about giving 33-year-old safety Jason and Devin McCourty a combined, what, $17 million? You talk about not being able to manage the cap. I'd rather have a 43-year-old quarterback than two 30-something-year-old safeties, and you're already given that quarterback $13 million in dead cap space. But that's not why I called. Why I called is I found Bill out, and he's already starting to plant the seeds for eventually leaving, and this went over Zoe's head yesterday. But, Jim, I love your pessimism. Chris, you're an intellectual. If we get a certain result on Tuesday, Bob Kraft is going to expedite the transition in ownership for tax purposes from him to Jonathan. And I don't see any chance on God's green earth that Bill Belichick is going to report and take orders from Jonathan Kraft under any circumstances. Bob's life pretty crummy right now. He doesn't have any fans at Gillette. And I don't see fans at Gillette until 2023, given Charlie Baker sitting at the State House. He can't coddle his celebrity friends, can't have much personal contact with his elite buddies, and, you know, can't do stuff in Florida, has to call into owners' meetings via Zoom, and his taxes skyrocket on Tuesday. So what do? You have these conversations if you have any sort of wealth. Bill's probably talked to Jonathan. They probably have had this plan since Myra had passed. It just will be expedited by the end of the new year. And I wonder what happens, because Bill's not going to take orders from Jonathan. So is it the Giants? Is it Dallas? Could he come up with the ultimate piece of comeuppance and go beg for a job down in Tampa Bay once Bruce Arians chokes in the NFC Championship game? There's a lot on the table here, but Bill is not here next year. The oddsmakers already say it. And I don't think Robert's here for much longer either after Tuesday.
Thanks, Jake.
Wow.
I don't know if it's next year. And
that's
I don't,
a take.
And I don't know if it's going to be determined because of the election results. And I do like that. It's not even a conspiracy. I can understand his line of thinking there.
Yeah.
But I would agree in that when the ownership transition happens, and that is going to happen, but sure, whenever it is, when it goes from Robert to Jonathan, and I've heard Felger talk about this too, that's when Bill's gone, because Bill is not going to answer to Jonathan. I mean, he was Robert's guy, you know?
Jonathan's been a part of the organization the whole time, and those two, Belichick and Jonathan, have worked together. I understand what people are saying. Maybe that relationship isn't on the same level as Robert Kraft. And
I've heard it described as frosty.
I don't know. How did the Bob Kraft-Belichick relationship look during the football life in 2009 when he's chomping on the gum and Robert's asking him about the weather and he's not giving him the time of day? And I've also heard that Bill will walk right past Robert in the hallway sometimes and not even say hi. Like, that's just the way Bill is. I guess my point would be, if they had the next guy and Bill felt like he could win another Super Bowl, I don't think he'd care who the owner was. Now, if it's a rebuilding situation and his relationship with one Kraft is not as good as it is with another, then I get it. But I don't think that just all by itself would motivate it. I think the combination of it and being like, oh man, the jig is up here, this is a rebuild, and the other stuff, that could drive him out.
But I could also see from Jonathan's perspective, if I was in his shoes, once that transition happened, this is like, okay, now I'm
sure,
truly running everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's my show. I want my guy. Like, we're yeah, starting fresh, especially if this yeah, thing has gone completely sideways. Whelan Norwood on Bill Belichick and his comments made in this interview on SiriusXM NFL Radio yesterday. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted to just reiterate a point I made on the Felger Mash show a few weeks ago. And Murray, I'm sure you vividly remember my call. But do you remember when Bill said something to the effect of, I only like to coach players who I like?
Yeah, yeah.
I only
yes,
like players who are coachable. Well, I think that explains a lot of his draft struggles. I mean, I think his list of draftable players is, you know, like 10 players that, you know, and that's it. I mean, Juwan Bentley, I'm sure he's a great guy. You know, he's a team captain of Peru. I'm sure N'Keal Harry has a lot of great intangible qualities. But if you run like Herman Munson, what difference does it make? And I think this is the issue, is that he doesn't, you know, he just, I think he probably ignores his scouts and just sort of handpicks these players that he likes. And I think that just creates all sorts of problems.
Yeah, Will, and I think with, you know, at this point in his career, when I hear that, I think what he's talking about, too, is sometimes with talent, especially at certain positions like wide receiver, with talent comes an attitude, right?
Sure.
And he didn't want to deal with that. So he can deal with, he'd rather deal with a guy that's a little bit more coachable and, you know, is more humble and willing to listen. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the most talented guy, N'Keal Harry. And so this is why you see certain positions on this team with the holes that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. I have to say this. You know, everybody has a weakness, blind spot, Achilles heel. Yeah, mine's technology. I think that when it comes to it with Belichick, it's wide receiver. Like, I would put him in the bottom four or five people in the league in terms of evaluating wide receivers coming out of college. And even the hit, the like some of the hits he's had. So look at a guy like Edelman. Edelman didn't play a down of wide receiver in college. So they're literally better off evaluating a guy who hasn't played the position than someone who has. And compare that to, say, the Steelers, who are always coming up with these wide receivers. Now, does that mean I'd rather have Tomlin and Kevin Colbert? No. I'm not dumb. I'd rather have Belichick. But everybody has a weakness. And, like, if you were telling me, like, Bill Belichick's evaluating a wide receiver and the guy has to be out of college and the guy has to be good and your life depends upon it, Chris, I'd be like, well, I'm dead. Like, I have no shot.
I mean,
because they are so terrible at it.
That draft of wide receivers last year, you got the dud all over the place.
I know.
Studs, A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin, Marquise Brown,
D.K. Metcalf,
Mecole Hardman, Darius Slayton, all up and down the draft board. You found the dud. Oh.
Even Deontay Johnson,
right,
pretty good for Pittsburgh.
My God. All right, more of your calls, your thoughts on Bill Belichick's comments he made in this interview yesterday with Charlie Weiss, 617-779-0985. And as you were just mentioning, Julian Edelman, he's not going to play tomorrow. Had a procedure done in his knee just a few days ago. Is he done? Like, done? We'll touch on that next here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
What's up? This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is it appropriate to do a little bit of a retrospective on Julian Edelman? Because if he does not come back and he has 1 year left on his contract, the Patriots say, you know what? Or Julian says, you know what? My body after 12 years, I think, has had enough. It's a hell of a player. And he's been a hell of a player because when you look at the separated shoulder, two times separated last year, and the cracked ribs that he played with and still had a 1,000-yard, 100-catch season, it's been remarkable.
She's got a date at midnight with Nosferatu.
You wouldn't know this song, but it's my favorite of the Halloween songs.
Oh,
typo
really?
Negative.
How would the Count sing that song?
Black, 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 number one.
All right, so that's Tommy Carr in NBC Sports Boston. We'll forget about the Count, Chris.
No, you got to bring the Count back, man.
Dark day
everybody,
in Gasper Murray history.
It's redemption. It's redemption for everybody. I think the problem was I wasn't really, like, ready to play the foil at that point.
Let's not try to polish a turd. Sometimes,
you sure?
Sometimes you bomb and you just got to own it.
Man, I wish we had. Man,
it is Halloween, though.
I wish we had that sound.
It is All Hallows Eve.
Yeah, we got to find that sound.
Let's not. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, on Wes Welker, who he's obviously very close with, too, written that book.
You mean
book.
Julian Edelman?
Why did I say Wes Welker? Julian Edelman. Oh, God. Oh, get that out of my mouth. Don't ever put those two in the same conversation, please.
Why?
Well, Stonehand bum costing that Super Bowl.
I knew you were going to go there.
Oh, God. You and your pumped up stats. God, I can't stand it.
I like Wes, man.
Oh, yeah, sure. Nice guy. Great eyes. All that. Look at all your juiced up stats. You accomplished nothing. That's Tom Curran on Julian Edelman. Had a knee procedure.
Yes.
He is out tomorrow, out indefinitely.
Yeah.
34 years old. And he kind of hints there, does Tom. Like, this could be it. Like, over for Edelman. And you look at the history of guys at that position that take the beating that they did, like Welker, like Troy Brown, like Wayne Chrebet back in the day, like 33-ish, around that age is the drop-off. Edelman's 34, and he don't look right and really hasn't over the last year or so. Is this it? And should it be it? If he's basically going to be playing on one leg, like, do you even want to see him out there?
Well, you know what's interesting about it is he had off-season knee surgery, so I don't know if it's the same knee. I haven't been able to ascertain that. But it's not a good sign. It either means he's having a procedure on a knee that he had a procedure on during the offseason, or that it's both knees. Either way, that's not good.
Right.
So next year, his base salary is 2.8. You know, the cap number is about 6.6. Given where they're at wide receiver, I think if he can get healthy and come back, I think you bring him back. You at least see what he has in camp. The base salary is not guaranteed, so you could see what he has in camp and cut him. I don't think that you're – first of all, he doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's going to walk away willingly unless he feels like he can go to Tampa and join Brady. And I feel like the Patriots are not in a position to turn down anybody who's competent or higher at that position.
Yeah, I've always felt like as a sports fan, the thing you never want to feel is like, I feel bad for that guy, and lately I've felt bad for Edelman. Like, he looks like he's miserable.
Well, he's the last guy left. He's sort of like, you know, everybody else, Gronk and Brady, everybody else is kind of gone offensively, and, you know, he's, for a team that was always next man up, he's last guy left.
But he's lost a step. He doesn't get the separation that he used to get, and that comes with age and the beating that he's taken. And if it's going to look like this, like, that's a guy I look at me like, it's probably time, dude.
But how much, I mean, again, obviously the knee's bothering him. The snaps were down noticeably. We all saw that. But how much of it is, you know, what the level of quarterback play has been? How much of it is that teams can focus on him because they don't have a lot of other weapons?
Well, he's the only reliable guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, how much of it is that versus his physical health?
Yeah. So, okay. So if that's the case, then maybe he's got another year left in him. But just go somewhere else.
So it's
not going to happen here.
Here's what I've heard on. I think a lot of this depends on how they play Sunday against the Buffalo Bills, and they have that game against the Jets. I mean, imagine if they lost to the Jets.
The way that they've looked, Chris, the last couple of weeks, that's actually in play as of right now. Let's see how it looks tomorrow. But based on these last two games, which have been, I mean, there was a no-show and a quit in that second half against the Niners. They play like that? Yeah, the Jets could beat them. They're that bad.
My understanding of the settlement situation is that there's a chance he could be back for the Baltimore game.
Oh.
But I think that depends basically on where they're at and whether they think it's worth it to, you know, to him, for them. But that's my understanding of this. I don't think that this was a major
just
procedure.
A clean out type thing.
I think that's probably accurate.
Okay.
Yes.
Dan in Rhode Island on the Patriots. You're next here in Gaspar Murray. Hello.
Hey, couple things real quick. One example of a coach who's always been really a good coach, now that he's got his rock star quarterback and his health holds up, is Andy Reid. He can add, what, maybe 3 Super Bowls? You think?
Yeah, I mean, it's trending that way. We'll see. I mean, you know, Mahomes has an injury history with that knee and the way that he plays. Who knows? I mean, I think at some point he's going to have to just try to stay in the pocket. But as of right now, yes, it's trending that way, Dan.
Well, but I would say this, and I'm an Andy Reid guy, don't get me wrong, but I think you could look at it the other way and say, you know, even Andy Reid, who sort of had the reputation of not delivering on the biggest stage in the biggest games, well, you give him the MVP quarterback and suddenly he's the guy. And I respect Andy Reid. But I'm saying I look at it kind of the other way that, you know, if you get one of these guys, these MVP type quarterbacks, it doesn't matter what your peccadilloes might be as a coach. Like, you're going to look a lot smarter and you're going to win.
Yeah, that's what I meant. He was always the one, the rock star quarterback away.
Yeah.
The other thing, I'm doing this because I want to force the imitation. But for Cam Newton, I feel bad for him if this is his career's on the line and this is what it comes down to he's playing with. But I guarantee you, if he got cut, or if they decide to say, we'll try to get 6th or 7th, Glory Hole in Dallas will be ringing, because you can win that division with, what, 7 wins probably this year?
I mean, the way it's trending, Dan, it's probably 6-10.
Let Cam go down in flames with that cast as opposed to what he's got right now, because they are loaded on offense. And at least you could say he sucks because he can't get the ball out, but they're loaded, man. And I think Jerry would put it in because he knows 7 wins would do it.
There's one thing I'd like to do is put it in, Dan, like you said. I'm going to make that call right now. He's been cut. Oh, I love me a superstar with swag, and you got it in spades there, Cam. I like how you dress, your hats. You bring in the girls, and you obviously don't like to wear rubbers just like me. How many kids you got? 7? Man, that's something old Jerry can appreciate. What's that? No, you were just talking about how you play. I'm sorry. I just can't help myself sometimes.
Yeah, look, they need a quarterback, and if it's going to be ugly here with the Patriots, as I said, we said it earlier, this is Cam Newton, I think, playing for his career now, too.
Sure.
It hasn't trended well the last couple of weeks. If it's going to be like tankathon here, they get blown out by the Bills, and it's as ugly as it's been the last couple of weeks, do the right thing by Cam Newton and just cut him, because you should probably see what you got in Jarrett Stidham, if anything. And at that point, I think you're probably better off trying to get into that top 10. You're not going to get Trevor Lawrence. You're not going to get Justin Fields out of Ohio State. But this Trey Lance, some prognosticators like, he could be around 10 or 11. Right now, if the season ended today, the Patriots, I think, are drafting 11th. You get him, maybe the kid out of BYU. I know Joe Murray loves him.
Yeah, Zach Wilson.
If it's going to be like this, Chris, and you don't know, it's like hitting a scratch ticket. But you have a better chance of actually hitting big on a quarterback in the first round. I know you'll find your Paxton Lynches here and there, or even Dwayne Haskins. Like, sometimes guys are taken too high and they just suck.
Bowler.
Yeah, but you have a better chance of trying to find the next guy in the first round.
Especially the way they've drafted. I mean, I feel like the higher they are, the better I'd feel about drafting quarterback. Let me just say this.
They should let Cam go so he can try to rehabilitate his career and get paid somewhere else. I think that would be the right thing to do, because if it's just not going to work here, and it hasn't looked like it has these last few weeks, and even go back to the win over Vegas, if that's how they're going to handle the season, and they're going to essentially tank, then let him go.
Yeah.
Let him go to Dallas.
And it helps them, you know, it helps them tank. I mean, I think, you know, he's maybe still too talented, too competent to fault on tank. I thought Will Blackman, former BC guy, NFL player, had the perfect tweet about Cam Newton going to the Patriots. And I feel like you'd appreciate this, Jim. Here's what he said. Cam going to the Patriots with no weapons is like going to Vegas with no connections. You hear all the great things and how fun Vegas is, yet you can't get into any of the clubs, can't get a cabana at the pool. You just get Denny's and head back to the hotel you booked on Hotwire.
I saw you retweet this the other day.
I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah. It's better than the one that I've been thinking of in recent weeks, ever since the passing of Eddie Van Halen. Cam Newton with the Patriots is like when Van Halen hired Gary Cherone as their frontman. Like, they were successful on their own, and you have this big institution in Van Halen and the Patriots, but they bring in a guy that doesn't feel like it's a good fit, Gary Cherone with Van Halen, Cam Newton with the Patriots, and it's just, you try to think it's good, but it's not. That's what it's felt like to me. With that, we'll pause here. No commercials, get you caught up with the Sports Hub headlines with yours truly, and then back with more of your phone calls, your thoughts on Bill Belichick, some of the comments he made in this interview on Sirius XM NFL Radio with his former offensive coach, Charlie Watt.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.